Well, hello everybody and welcome to our talk. So my name is Onur Acıçmaz and my co-speaker is Andrew Blyche, and we work for Samsung. And we will talk about widget permission and access control enforcement in this talk. So I think all of you already became familiar with the Tizen architecture by now. So we have the Linux kernel at the bottom. On top of it, we have our core services, our frameworks, libraries, etc. And we have web applications on at the top. So here the term web applications does not necessarily indicate that these applications need to be accessed through over a network, or need to access the network to function. It simply refers to the fact that our application model, our programming model, is based on web technologies, HTML5, JavaScript, CSS, and a bunch of JavaScript APIs that we call web APIs. So these applications, we also call them widgets, are packaged in a specific format according to W3C spec. Contain configuration files, manifest files, are locally installed on the device and can access a wide range of device capabilities through our JavaScript APIs. So the installation and execution of those widgets are handled by the web runtime. And since we have web applications that run on web runtime on Tizen, the security of web runtime and those widgets are it's very crucial for the Tizen devices, for the actual the entire ecosystem, actually. Something is wrong with the slides. Oh, there we go. It's okay. I can control it here. What? Okay, so the security of web runtime and web applications is crucial for the entire Tizen ecosystem. And this is our topic in this talk, actually. So we will talk about the widget access control enforcement, so widget permissions. So here you see our content. We will start with an overview, a very brief overview of Tizen security framework, and we will talk about SMAC. Actually, there was a session yesterday on Tizen security framework, and our colleagues gave detailed information about the framework. So we will just talk about only the things that are related to our talk here. Then we will move on to widget permissions and access control model. We will talk about feature declarations in the manifest, different user prompt types. We will talk about WARP, widget access control access request policy, which handles the network requests. And we will see example manifest file and a policy file. Then we will talk about how developers can set the security configurations of the widgets using our SDK. Then we will dive into the details of access control enforcement. Yes. Not really. Actually, in Tizen, our applications are web applications. So all the Tizen applications are web applications, not really native. Okay. So in yeah. Yes. Okay. So, I mean, we can talk about it after our session if you want. Okay. So, let us give a very brief overview of our security framework. So each application package contains a manifest file, and there are security-related entries in the manifest, and we will talk about them in detail later. So when an application is uploaded to the App Store, before it gets published, it has to be signed with a valid certificate. And when a user wants to download and install this application, the package manager on the device processes this application's package, verifies the certificate and the signature, then sets up the access control configuration for this particular application. And at this stage, there may be some user interactions required. The system may request user to grant some permissions for this app. And during runtime, each application runs in its own custom sandbox, which is powered by SMAC. And SMAC is our main kernel-level access control mechanism that we use in Tizen. And so every application runs in its own custom sandbox and can only access the resources that it is authorized to. And SMAC only deals with kernel space objects like file system objects, sockets. And for user space objects, and these are the objects that are governed by the framework daemons, we have a security server. And whenever those daemons get a request from an application, they send a query to the security server to see if that application is authorized for that particular request. And the security server basically checks the access control configuration, the SMAC configuration, the policy, and basically returns back with a yes or no answer. Actually, this is what happens during like an indirect IPC. For direct IPC calls, the daemons can directly check the SMAC configuration by themselves. Okay, so this is the overall scheme which applies to any application, any process in the system, even the system processes and framework daemons. So for web applications, we on top of what SMAC provides, we also have additional, much finer-grained controls on Tizen web applications. Okay, let's talk about SMAC. So it's our main access control mechanism in Tizen. It's implemented in the mainline kernel as an LSM module, a Linux security module. So the way LSM works is that there are a bunch of LSM hooks inside the kernel. And during a system call, whenever kernel needs to access a system resource or perform an action that's subject to access control checks, those hook functions are called. And the control is passed to the security module. And the security module performs the access control checks and returns back with an allow or deny verdict. So in SMAC, we have the notions of subjects, objects, access and access rights, and labels. So basically, the subject is an active entity in the system which performs the access, and these are the processes. And objects are passive entities that the subjects are performing the access on. And access performs from a subject to an object, and we have access rights, like classical access rights, read, write, and execute. And we also have the notion of label, which is very important. It's basically a security tag applied to subjects and objects. And SMAC uses these labels to identify subjects and objects. So each subject and object in the system may have a unique label, or they can all have the same label. It all depends on the SMAC configuration in the system. And each SMAC check is based on the object and subject labels. Okay, we have two different types of labels, the process label and the object labels. And SMAC uses extended file attributes to store and retrieve the SMAC label configuration. There are two different extended attribute types, SMAC64 and SMAC64 exec. And SMAC64 is used for regular file system objects. And SMAC64 exec is for executables. So when you call exec on an executable, when you execute an executable, the value of its SMAC64 exec attribute becomes the label of that process. And again, SMAC basically works on subject labels and object labels. So during this, an access control check, it gathers the labels from the subject and object and basically checks its rule set, its SMAC policy, and basically returns an allow or deny answer. Okay, so the SMAC rules are in the form of subject label, space object label, and the access rights. So let's go through a simple example here. So if you want to run cat application to read file 1.txt and assume that cat's SMAC64 exec value is cat app and file 1 SMAC64 attribute is my file, so the SMAC rule that will allow cat to read file 1 is cat app space my file space r, r for read. So if you have rw, then that rule will allow both read and write access. Okay, so let's move on to our actual topic, actual subject, widget permissions and access control model. So in Tizen, a subset of, yes. Editing what? The SMAC configuration, you mean? No.
What about offline?
So a subset of our JavaScript APIs are considered restricted. So basically any JavaScript function that can access private data on the device, like location information, contacts, calendar, etc., are restricted, and the widgets need proper authorizations to invoke those functions. And to get an authorization, first of all, the widgets need to declare which permissions, which resources they need to access. So in the manifest file, we have two different elements for that purpose. We have future element, which is used for JavaScript functions for the device APIs, and access element for the network resources. And so during an authorization, or the way the authorization works is, whenever those functions are invoked, or whenever the widget needs to access or tries to access a network resource, the web runtime first evaluates its policy and tries to identify which prompt type it needs to use. So, and we have different prompt types in Tizen that we will talk about in a minute. And it shows a prompt to the user, and the user basically can either deny or allow the access or the permission. Okay, here we see example future declarations, yes.
The permissions that the authorizations, can it specific to specific capabilities, or in other words, can it tell it the application give it these permissions but not these?
Yes.
It's not like a one all scheme, get
it or not. No, it's not like all or nothing. It's not like Android. Okay, so developers must declare which features, and these permissions are called features, which features their widgets need. And this declaration, you know, needs to be in the manifest file. And we see an example feature declaration. So the one in the middle is from W3C spec, which basically like outlines some guidelines for different widget systems. And the one at the bottom is our actual feature declaration in Tizen. So each device API group or Tizen web API group has its own set of features. For example, in this case, for time API, we have three different features, time.read, and time.write. So if your widget needs to use setCurrentDateTime function to basically change the time setting, then it needs time.write feature. For any other time API functions, time.read will be sufficient. So the feature time is the same as having both time.read and time.write. So here we have a very simple example here. If a widget has this piece of JavaScript code, which basically uses getCurrentDateTime function to read the time and feeds it into isLeapYear function to see if the current year is a leap year. So the feature or the declaration file needs to have at least two features. So you need to have, first of all, the Tizen feature, which gives access to the Tizen object. So anything that starts with Tizen, like Tizen.time or Tizen.whatever, then you need to use this Tizen feature, and you need to declare it in your widget's manifest. And you also need time.read to use this time API functions. Okay, let's talk about WARP. It's again a W3C spec for network accesses. So by default, all the network accesses from the widgets are denied. So if your widget needs to access any external resources, it has to declare them in the manifest file. And we have this access element in the manifest for that. And developers can basically specify which protocol the widget will use, either HTTP, HTTPS, which domains it needs to access, and whether it needs to access subdomains, and even they can specify the port number. And here we see a bunch of different examples. So in the example on the right bottom corner, basically, it shows the usage of the special character star, which means that, you know, widget is requesting like full access to the network. And actually, you know, we do not really recommend developers to use it unless it's absolutely necessary for the widget. Okay, here we see a sample manifest file. So there are a bunch of other stuff in the manifest, like the icon, the name of the widget, the description, etc. We are just interested in the security-related items, and you can see like multiple feature declarations there, multiple lines, and an access element there. Okay, let's talk about the prompt types. Basically, the features will be granted based on by the web runtime based on the web runtime policy and the confirmation of the user. So basically, during an access or a function invocation, the web runtime first checks the ACE policy and tries to identify which prompt type it needs to use for that particular access. And we have five different prompt types, three of which requires user interaction. So the last two, the permit and deny, there is no user interaction for them. So permit basically means, you know, the web runtime will permit it without asking the user. And deny means it will deny it. So the blanket prompt is what it means is basically web runtime asks the user only once during the life cycle of this widget. And if the user grants that permission, it can basically use that feature anytime once. So the session prompts, basically web runtime asks the user just once per session. And for one-shot prompts, basically each time the restricted API is invoked, the function is invoked, web runtime needs to, you know, ask the user for the acknowledgement. Okay, here we see screenshots of these three different prompt types. Again, the type of the prompt in a given situation depends on the policy, web runtime policy. And these policies are driven by the operators and the device manufacturers. The developer cannot really, you know, make anything to change those policies. So users can affect the policy, not actually the policy, but the way web runtime behaves through user preferences, but only in a more restricted way. So if something is allowed by the policy, the users can choose to deny it, but not the opposite. Yes. Which one? Which error message? These ones?
Yeah.
Okay, so these are not error messages. These are just prompts.
Well.
So of course it's possible to change that, but I'm not the right guy to. to ask that. So this is a web runtime interface. So if you want to change those, you need to change web runtime. Okay, here we see an example policy file, and I will not really go through the policy line by line. So what it says is, for example, for messaging.send feature, it tells the web runtime to use session prompt when roaming is enabled. So in the policy, you basically specify like which prompt time needs to be used for which feature, and under which condition, etc. Of course, it's a very simple policy. So in a real product, I mean, we will have like much more complicated policies. Okay, so how can developers use Tizen SDK to configure the security settings of the web application? So we'll talk about that. So basically, my co-speaker, Andrew, will present the rest of the slides.
Okay, so we talked a lot about these features and the accesses that need to be put into these manifest files. But how exactly do we go about doing this sort of thing? And in the Tizen SDK, there is a manual process for adding it, but it's kind of a user-friendly way of doing it. So you have the option of manually adding the manifest file, which is, if you look in the SDK, it's in your when you create a new widget package, there's a file called config.xml. And within that file, that's considered the manifest file. And when you open that up within the SDK, you're given several different options. Some of the options include viewing the source of that file, but also you can see options for adding different device features through this sort of GUI interface that you can see on the screen there. So, for example, if you go into the feature tab on your manifest file, you have the option of adding any of the different Tizen APIs that will be needed for your application. So for this example, if you want to add the accelerometer feature, you go, you look for the, you click add in the feature list, you look for it in the check in the drop-down box, and then you select it, and then you click OK, and it gets added to your manifest file automatically when you save it. So that's kind of that process. Right now, this is a manual process that needs to be done. So if, for example, if your code makes a call to the Tizen accelerometer API, but your application doesn't start working properly, one possible sort of reason of error would be is that you've not declared it in the manifest file, which would explain why it's not being allowed to access that that resource. And on the other side, we have the WARP, the widget access request policies, which allow us to specify the different types of domains that we're going to need network access to, for example. And there's also a GUI for this as well, which allows you to click add, type in the domain or the URL that you're going to be accessing, and then whether or not you want to access any sort of subdomains within that. And that's defined whether you allow subdomain, whether you set that to be true or false in your configuration file there. You can enter numerous numbers of URLs if you want to edit that. As Onar said, there's the option of adding the star character in there. But once again, that gives your widget access to every URL. So that's kind of, you know, if you're debugging, fine. But if you're going to deploy your app in the wherever, don't do that sort of thing. Okay, so the access control enforcements on the Tizen web apps. We've talked about the SMAC application sandboxing using labels. We also have this access for control engine called ACE that runs in the user space. Each widget that's run is run in its own process. And each process, because it's web, it's running in our web runtime, each process is WebKit-based. So it's running along that. And each process, each widget is its own process, essentially, for that kind of thing. And then you have the Tizen web runtime does have support for various different types of APIs. So primarily the Tizen web app APIs, but we also have W3C APIs and non-W3C APIs, such as WebGL, for example. And there's other talks that detail a lot of these other APIs out there. So here's a general design of what kind of what the access control engine looks like and what's going on from a high level. So we have these policy enforcement points in the web runtime. So that when you access one of these restricted APIs, for example, that request is forwarded to something called a subject advocate, and then the subject advocate then forwards that request on in order to be evaluated to determine whether this request is allowed or not. And some of the stuff that goes on with that sort of thing is it has to gather information on the device, such as whether your device is roaming, whether you're not roaming, where the access is going to. What your policy file on the device says and what your manifest file says, and then it makes a verdict out of all of these different signals and then returns that signal back to the policy enforcement point, which says to whether to finally allow or deny this access. And if we go to the next slide, actually, we can see sort of a general flow of how this works in an ACE policy evaluation situation, whereas we have the Tizen web widget, widget requests access to the JavaScript API. The web runtime formulates a query to the access control engine. The policy enforcement point receives this request from the web runtime. And then the subject advocate, as it said, forwards this request to the policy evaluator. And then the evaluator then goes and checks for the requested attributes in the verdict manager. So you have this verdict manager which will cache similar accesses that have occurred before in order to quicken the decision process for this widget while it's running, in order to do that sort of thing, for example. But if a verdict is not in your access control engine database, it has to go out and now evaluate this decision. And some parts of that decision, as Onar explained, will include prompting the user with one of those three different prompt types, or whether looking at if it's a permit or deny based on the policy file on the device. And the answer then gets returned back to the verdict manager, and then the verdict manager takes that answer, caches it, and then forwards the answer finally back to the web runtime, and then for the widget to determine the access. So on the flip side, we have the widget process sandbox via SMAC that does occur. And as we discussed, there's a SMAC policy file on the device, and this has all the rules in it for the widget. And the rules in the SMAC policy file are updated during install, whether you're upgrading the widget on the device, whether you're uninstalling the operation, but also there are times during runtime where the different policy file may be updated depending on if there's a dynamic decision that needs to be made when then, and then rules will be created on the system for that sort of thing. And we have this general flow that looks like, as you can see on the slides here, where the widget will request access to a device feature. The ACE system will evaluate it, as we shown on the previous slide. If the ACE system denies it, then it doesn't go any further. But if the ACE system does allow that sort of process, underlying, you'll see the access will have to go down to the lower levels of the system, where the eventual system calls they get called will be intercepted by our SMAC LSM module, and the policy file will be checked, and then based on the labels that are being compared and what's in the policy file and the permissions that are being requested, an allow or deny decision will be made on that access, for example. Okay, so moving away from more of the design, we kind of take a step back and ask ourselves, why are we sandboxing the widget processes? And we can look at some of these numbers that we've pulled out from the CVE, the Common Vulnerabilities and Exposures Database, the National Vulnerable Database, that kind of gathers all these exploits that have been recorded and the bugs that exist and sort of thing. And over time, we've seen that for WebKit, which is what our browser is running as and our web runtime is running using, is that the number of CVEs have increased over time. In addition to the number of CVEs that have increased, we've also seen an increase in the severity of these vulnerabilities as well. So there's further and further our higher vulnerability issues than lower vulnerability stuff. And the next. Okay. So on the next slide, we kind of dive down further into that data, and we can see the classifications of where these errors are, of where these vulnerabilities are occurring. The vast majority of them are occurring as buffer errors, but we also are seeing code injection, cross-site scripting, and resource management errors as well. So these are all things that require us to sandbox the widgets in order to help protect against some of these vulnerabilities. So now we have the kind of the overlevel view of the entire system here. So the widget sandbox via SMAC, and we can see how basically, as each widget's run, each widget is run under a different SMAC label, as we discussed before. So basically, when a widget gets launched, it's assigned a label that it's going to be running under, and that label comes from what was created during the installation of the widget, and that's what it'll be running under, for example. And we have an example on the next sort of slides here where we can kind of follow this flow and see how this actually works in the system. So if we have a widget A, for example, and it contains some code that's going to require it to look at to get the address book and then do some searching on that sort of thing, we know that this sort of read access is going to require access to the context database on the device. So when the widget gets installed, there's going to have to be labels created in order to allow it to access the context database and be able to access the label that was applied to that context database on the system. In this sort of example, we're just assuming a blanket prompt on the system, but a lot of this prompting depends on the policy that exists on the device. So in this situation, we'll have the developer will develop their app using the SDK. In their manifest file, they'll put the two different features that they need. For example, in this example, they only need to read the contact database. So they'll have to put the Tizen feature as well as the contact.read feature into their manifest file. Once they've developed this and they've tested it, this kind of stuff is a black box right now, but the widget will be uploaded to some place and it'll be distributed for that sort of thing. And then a user will come along and decide to download a widget or decide to download their application. And when the application gets pushed to the device to be installed, a process occurs where the App Store client will then take the widget, send it to the package manager for installation. The package manager will then install the widget on the device for you. And as it's installing the widget on the device, it's updating the SMAC policy on the system based on what it needs to be doing, as well as creating the proper directories and putting the files in the right locations on the system. So then once the widget's been installed, the user can go and launch the widget. And that's involved simply by, you know, going to the menu screen, tapping on the icon and pressing it and running it. When the widget is launched, when you touch it, the AUL is responsible for taking that widget, launching it. And then when the AUL, so as it's being launched, the web runtime initializer sets the label that this widget will be running under. So this label is the SMAC64 label, and it sets it. This widget will be running under the label widget A as it was created. And then once the widget's running, it's now sandboxed under this label. And it's only given access to basically anything that that widget A label as a subject has access to in the policy file, for example. So it can access its own files in its directory, com.tizen.widgeta. But additionally, it can also access files, the resources in the contacts database for that. But it can't access resources for widget B or any sort of other system files because the SMAC policy does not allow that sort of situation to occur like that. So in conclusion for developers, what you need to know is that features need to be defined manually right now. The SDK will not automatically go through your code and figure out what you need to do. You need to be aware of what you're calling and then put those features in your manifest file. Make sure that you only declare the minimum set of features that you're going to need. So you can very easily just add every single feature, but that's not the best situation as well because you're going to be granting access to your features to your app that it may not need access to as well. So you want to kind of use the minimum set for your device, for your application. And also, pay attention to proper error handling in your application. So never assume that a call will succeed. The security system could deny for any reason based on what's happening with the different signals that are coming in for the policy evaluation. So never assume that your call will succeed. Always have some sort of fallback that will occur, that will gracefully handle the error condition if that does happen. So thank you very much. A lot of this documentation is on the websites for that sort of thing. And we can open the floor for questions. Okay. Yes, it will be available. And in this deck, we've also included the appendix of the Tizen APIs. They're also available on the website, but they're in the slide deck as well.
Are all the sessions being audio taped?
I believe these are audio taped, but the ballroom ones are videotaped. Yes.
The audio.
That's my understanding. Yes.
Yeah. Could you speak a little bit about the signing requirements and what the developer actually has to do to get an application to install on an end user device? Can I sign it in the SDK?
Right now it's not clear yet, to be honest. So we have some feature plans for that.
Actually, Boomjin will be the correct person to address those questions. The person just sitting behind you. So he's in charge of the overall security framework. Yeah.
So I think this model is much better in terms of security. I mean, so in Android case, this all or nothing scheme, I mean, you either allow everything that an application wants to access. So, I mean, the user doesn't really have any power over which capabilities the application can access. So the only thing they can do is not to install the application. But in our case, so users have more power. So in the worst case, they can accept everything, which will be similar to the Android case. But if a user is concerned about the security issues and privacy issues, so they can basically, they have much the power over what the applications can do. Yeah.
Is there a guideline as to how we're going to develop to streamline it to the non-techie users, which is about 98% in the world? I like the idea of the flexibility and a lot of...
So actually it's not difficult to use. For the permission granting, actually, developers doesn't really have. Yeah, it's all depends on the web runtime implementation. All this UI comes from the web runtime. But indeed, it's not very difficult for users to make a decision. I mean, the questions that they need to answer will be like. So what developers can do is actually limited. So developers can only specify which features they will need, and basically also need to, have some proper error handling. So other than that, the developers doesn't really have any power over what kind of UI is shown to the user for prompting and etc.
So as we described. If your file is created in your, if you create a file within your widget framework, your folder for that sort of thing, it's only going to be accessible by that widget.
Very tight sandbox.
Yes.
Yeah. So if, for example, if someone else puts another widget on the device, you're not going to be able to read the file from that.
It's like a widget level sandbox.
So how about we have one more question?
Yeah. Sure. One
okay. Yeah, it is. And a lot of the prompting mechanisms are all defined by this policy file.
I think that probably we need to have some tuning from security perspective and usability perspective and from end user. It is not one-to-one. There's a lot of things we have to tune.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right now, we don't really have a nice solution for that. It's a problem which is valid for any platform, not only Tyson.
We have to end the session, but you want to talk offline.
Yeah, let's talk offline. But thank you, our speakers.
Thanks, everybody.